Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 327. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me here in Las Vegas. A beautiful Thursday afternoon in Las Vegas. Not a cloud in the sky. About 100 degrees outside, which might sound hot to some people, but it's been about 115 here. So we'll take 100 degrees out of the beautiful Casa de Cold Coffee. The palatial grounds are feeling cool this afternoon.
Yeah, man, it's beautiful outside right now. Got a nice cold one in my hand, but not a typical cold one right now. I have a mocha frappuccino because I'm feeling fancy.
A mocha frappuccino. That is kind of embarrassing, you know, and it's especially embarrassing because we've got wonderful frosty beverages shared to us by our friend Anthony Beach at Latchkey Brewing, 1795 Hancock Street in San Diego, California. If you're trying to get ready for your Independence Day weekend and you're looking for some a local business to support, you know, so don't give it to the big guy. Don't give it to the man. You know, I'll offer up a little something to our fine friends at Latchkey Brewing down there in San Diego, California. And send us a variety pack of frosty beverages, some of the ones that we're used to, some of the ones we know, as well as the new one. The Ziggy Stratadust, a 3x dry hopped with Strata hops.
Strata
hops. Double IPA is 3x dry hopped with Strata hops, giving it an incredible hop forwardness and nice dankness as well. I don't know that I've seen dankness used to describe anything other than marijuana, maybe on certain occasions. But our man Anthony Beach points it out there. It has got some nice dankness to it. I know you've had a little sample of the Ziggy Stratadust.
And
does the dankness live up to the expectations?
It does. And the can artwork is absolutely incredible. I love it. If anybody knows Ziggy Stardust with the David Bowie, you would get the reference of it once you see the can. But yeah, man, it's delicious. And you know what's better than dry humping? Dry hops. And you know what's better than dry hops?
Sir,
Double dry hops.
Did he say dry hop?
Hey, girl.
What did you put in that mocha frappuccino, man? I think they spiked your mocha frappuccino.
I might put a little J-Mo up in here. You know, just a tip, girl. I'm just going to double hop that ass. Double hop, triple hop.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, yes, the family road show here.
Sponsored no longer by Disney Plus.
Amazing, amazing. Well, listen, I was going to say the reason I don't have a beverage right now, you clearly are imbibing in beverages. We're both preparing to go somewhere. We're both kind of wrapping up, getting the last second things done. You're heading off to a little family vacation,
yes.
a little enjoy some off time on this Independence Day weekend. Me, being the guy that I am, I'm going to work more, but I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm heading out to Philadelphia tonight. We've got Fury Pro Grappling on Friday, so that'll be the first ever edition of a grappling event from our good friends at Cage Fury Fight Championship. And then Saturday, of course, CFSC 98. So both those events are going to be on UFC Fight Pass. So if you're looking for a little, you know, MMA and some submission grappling on a weekend that doesn't have a lot of big MMA events, we got you covered at CFFC, but you don't have to worry about work right now. You're getting ready to go see some family and just enjoy a nice 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, man, I'm stoked. I'm gonna be going just outside of Murfreesboro in Tennessee to see the family, and we're going to do the whole 4th of July sort of fireworks and just get to see nieces, nephews, my mom, my sister, brother-in-laws. Yeah, man, with this crazy schedule that we've been doing, It's just been nonstop, man. So at some point, it was just like, you know, you just got to make some time to see family or do what you can do. And this has just happened to be one of those ones.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm super stoked to just get out of the heat for just a teeny little bit, see some family, you know, drink some beers, light some things up, blow some shit up. Yeah, man, I'm stoked.
Get yourself all ready for UFC 264. Obviously,
that's
going to be a big one.
That's going to be a big one, too.
Conor McGregor. Oh, man, anytime Conor McGregor fights, obviously that's going to be a big one. The media will all be traveling into town. Of course, we'll be at T-Mobile Arena again for the first time since last March. Sold-out crowd. Yeah, it's going to be a big one. So, like you said, you got to enjoy a couple days off. But that doesn't mean the MMA Roadshow takes off. No, sir, 327 consecutive weeks without fail.
That's a lot of weeks
to you. So listen, we said there's not any major events happening. Although CFFC is pretty major. We got a good card over there.
We're taking over Fight Pass.
Still stuff going on. telling you, bro. We got grappling now too, man. We're going. Who knows what we'll do next, man? Maybe we'll come up with a kickboxing concept too, man. We'll just have it all going on. But who knew that? I don't know. The biggest story in mixed martial arts would be Joe Schilling this week, man, and this knockout video of him knocking out a patron in a bar, and just the divide that it's caused, man. It's been so interesting to me to see the fallout online between, it's like 50%. Hell yeah, Joe Schilling, you got to show these idiots that you can't go around acting like that, to the other half of being like, Joe Schilling, what are you doing? You're a professional fighter. You're going to get your ass sued. You can't be acting like that. You can't be behaving like that. I'm, I guess, somewhere in between. I mean, I think as a professional fighter, you do carry some responsibility of not being able to just go off and wail on people in the general public. But at the same time, man, the general public has to know you can't walk around and just act like a complete jackass and not expect to pay any repercussions for your actions as well. So I'm kind of torn on exactly where I fall on who was wrong with this and how. I mean, look, legally, I know who's wrong. Joe Schilling's going to get sued for this, man. There's no question in my mind he's going to end up having to pay some money to this guy. But I don't know, just such a weird situation. I'm going to be honest with you, Kolkai. When I first saw the video, I thought it was fake, man. It looked like it was staged to me. It's first of all, I don't even know why there was a camera rolling on this guy. He's just acting like a goofball in a bar. And then I'm like, does anybody actually hang out at a bar with like their shirt buttoned all the way up and their tie tied and the little clip there and just kind of grooving like a complete douchebag? I mean, not to pick on the guy too much. And then Joe Schilling happens to walk by in a Joe Schilling T-shirt, and I mean, does Joe Schilling really walk around in a Joe Schilling T-shirt all the time? That kind of surprised me a little bit. And then, I don't know, he just kind of wailed on the dude without too much provocation, I guess is the word I'm looking for. Now, he's come back and explained kind of what happened. I don't know that it was the greatest explanation of all time, but I don't know, I'm torn on this because I think Joe's right. People don't have to feel like they can just be douchey and flex on people like the guy did, but at the same time, I don't know, man. If you're a professional fighter, like, don't you have to have a little bit more of a fuse, I guess, man? A little bit longer limit, because I think he's about to get sued, man.
Yeah, I mean, if your life isn't in danger and somebody doesn't lay hands on you or doesn't risk you at bodily harm or where you're actually defending yourself, they could say whatever the hell they want to you. They could call you the nastiest things in the world. They can talk trash about your mom, all that other stuff. Does that mean you deserve an ass whipping? Sure. Does it mean that you can give the ass whipping? No, you cannot. Can you defend yourself? Yes, you can. If it is a life-threatening altercation, you can defend yourself. That is your right. But that being said, anybody that, you know, handles firearms, handles all kinds of other stuff, you know, you have to be very... You have to know that what you do has life-changing ramifications. Granted, this is a little bit different because this is hands, you know, but most of these fighters are considered deadly weapons. But still, you could hit somebody. Somebody could fall, hit their head, die, and you are going to jail more than likely for manslaughter. If you can turn the other cheek and if you can walk away, you turn the other cheek, you walk the other way. I'm not saying if somebody lays hands on you and is assaulting you, defend yourselves by all means. And if it is life-threatening, do what you need to do to equalize the threat, to stop it, to make sure it cannot hurt you or your loved ones. But that being said, Joe knows that if a fight can be avoided, a fight can be avoided. If a guy is drunk, if a guy is being an asshole, he's being drunk and he's being an asshole. It doesn't mean that he needs to get his lights knocked out. Even if he comes and steps in your face, you have the ability to walk away from it. You know, if your life is threatened, you have the right to defend yourself. I mean, I don't think his life was really being threatened. I think
no,
his
I mean,
ego
that's what
was,
he said. He went to social media and say like, I had to defend myself.
His ego was being threatened.
Yeah, exactly. But That's it. And I know he kind of tried to lay it out on social media that, I was just defending myself. I felt my life was threatened, you know, trying to make that kind of legal case or whatever. But come on, man, we know that's not the case, at least from the video we saw. I mean, it's in stunning 4K. Like, I still don't understand why it was being filmed in the first place. It still feels fake to me, to be honest with you. But I think you hit the nail on the head right there, man. I mean, it may seem like it's something that needs to happen, but, you know, somebody falls and hits their head on a bar stool or something, you know, on the way down, or they just happen to hit the floor wrong, and now all of a sudden the guy's dead and you're getting locked up, man. It's just,
and your life's
and I
forever
like Joe,
changed.
Man. He's a,
yep.
Your life is forever changed. You threw away your life, you know, for this one moment of, I guess, telling this drunk dude to settle down. And I just, you got to think about that. So I don't know. I saw a lot of people kind of glorifying what Joe did. And I get what they're saying, that, like, people shouldn't have the right to feel like they can just act a fool, you know, in a bar and hanging out. And the guy did, you know, flinch at Joe. You can see it. I mean, that part of their I wouldn't even call it an altercation, but part of their interaction is covered up by another person that steps in the frame. But you can clearly see that the guy kind of jumps at Joe, and Joe then cracks him. But I don't know, man. I think you just got to, like you said, turn your cheek and laugh, and, you know that you could have whipped his ass, and they need to settle down. And, you know, maybe say something to him like, "I'm going to refrain from punching you right now, but don't ever do that to me again, because this is, you know, what could have happened," or whatever. But you risk really screwing up your life. So hopefully Joe Schilling doesn't get dinged too bad in the financial department, because I got to imagine a lawsuit is coming. So that was kind of the surprise story. I guess the other, hell, just as surprising of a story, but a completely different kind of story, is this interim heavyweight title fight, man. It, I guess, pulling back the curtain a little bit, it screwed us up, right? We had done a spinning back click segment on Monday that you were recording and producing, where we basically just debated whether or not Ciryl Gane, who said "I'm ready for a title fight," was truly ready for a title fight, and all of us in the panel, we're like, no, it's too early. You're rushing him. You know, yes, he's going to fight for a title at some point, but let's not put him there right now. And before we even get the video produced and released, we find out, oh, Ciryl Gane is going to be fighting for a title, and it's an interim title against Derek Lewis. Of course, Francis Ngannou was a little bit upset, said that nothing has been fair in this process. And his manager, of course, came out and started kind of going in on Dana White a little bit. And so there's a lot to take in here. I guess the first thing I wanted to say before I get your thoughts is this is the reality of the business now. I mean, I know that that's not exciting to say, and I know a lot of people were like, oh, damn, the UFC, how could they do this? I'm just going to say, look, of course the interim title fight makes no damn sense whatsoever. It makes no sense. We do not need an interim title in the UFC's heavyweight division. But what we do know is that the UFC had a date planned in August in Houston, and this was part of a sponsorship type deal, you know, as part of the presenting sponsorship with the city of Houston, signing these kind of site fee deals that they've done for years and years and years. You know, it's why they partnered with the Brazilian government for a couple years, while we were going to random cities in Brazil 7 times a year at one point, because the Brazilian government was paying for it. And the city of Houston was working out a deal as well. You know, you saw this economic impact study that the UFC put out recently, and it's because they were partnering with the city of Houston, and they showed that, hey, we can generate revenue. So anyway, that's what's going on behind the scenes. That's the reality of the business. The UFC needed to put on an event in August in Houston, and knowing that, A, they needed a good headliner. Not that, you know, Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena isn't a great fight, but it's not going to sell a ton of pay-per-views, if we're being 100% honest. So you need to sell pay-per-views, and you need to fill that arena. And how do you fill an arena in Houston, Texas, especially when the UFC just came there not too long ago with a really good card? You got to have Derek Lewis on the card. Now, ideally, you'd like to have Francis Ngannou in that fight, but Francis had just traveled to Africa. He wasn't ready to go, and that's every bit his right to not have to, you know, show up in August if he's not ready to go in August. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the UFC still has to put this event on. So they come up with an interim title. The interim title makes no damn sense whatsoever, but I don't understand some of the outrage of it. I mean, it's just a marketing tool. It's just an opportunity to put a fight. And look, it gets Derek Lewis a paycheck. It gets Ciryl Gane a paycheck. If Derek wins, he still gets the fight with Francis Ngannou that he thought he was going to get anyway. If Ciryl wins, man, now you're talking about this, you know, crazy story, this, you know, Ciryl and Francis coming out of the same gym and having a bit of a fallout with, Francis having a bit of fallout with Fernand Lopez, who's still Ciryl's coach to this day. So there's a little bit of the coaching rivalry in there. So at the end of the day, I think the interim title's stupid, but I don't really feel offended by anything that's happened here, especially knowing what's going on behind the scenes. And it's just part of business.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is, Cyril and Derek would have been fine for me to watch it as a heavyweight main event anyways. For me personally, I don't need the interim title to make it more exciting for me to want to watch it. I get it if, you know, the UFC has been stuck on this idea that pay-per-views almost always have to have, like, this title fight if they can, you know. It's like they think people aren't going to want to buy the pay-per-view if they don't. It's just unfortunate that at one point the interim title, you're right, now it seems like it's like just a PR ploy just to do whatever. But at one point it did seem to mean something because it was a stopgap when there was a legitimate reason for there to be a title fight. But for some reason, the current title holder couldn't do it, whether it be injury, whether it be some other sort of freakish obligation that they had to make an interim fight. That has gone away, and now you have this, oh, well, right now we can't come to grips with the current title holder, but we're going to move ahead because we have our own plans, and we need to get this thing done, and we don't think that we're going to get the buys unless we have a title. So we're going to create this interim title, and we know that they'll have to fight afterwards to unify the belt, you know. It's just sad because some people still, you know, and a lot of times it's the fighters still feel in their minds, they're like, yes, here I am. I'm getting finally to fight for the title. Whereas now us on the outside, I feel I'm so getting desensitized to what is even this interim title, because now it's just a stopgap. It doesn't mean what it used to anymore. And I feel bad for these fighters that, you know, I love Derek, and I'm so happy that he's getting an opportunity to fight for what is the title. But it's such a sham in the same sense that, you know, 1 month later, they could have fought, and Francis would have been fine to fight. He's only had the belt for what, like 3 months, 2 months, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they're already trying to rush to force him when the guy just won it. Let him do a victory lap at least, you know, for Christ's sakes. Stop rushing to push something just because you had to get something out on the books. People, they don't trust enough that that people would have been happy to watch Derek and Cyril fight regardless in a headline event. They don't trust the fact that their fighters carry enough weight. They think that they have to have this title thing, that it's going to make people all of a sudden want to watch the fight more. If anything, you alienated people and you pissed people off because people are like, dude, what are you doing? You know, like, because they just fell in love with Francis. They were falling in love before. If they're not already, they're falling in love with him. And now you're trying to strip his power, trying to strip some of his mojo away just so you can have another pay-per-view thing. And then thinking that, oh, okay, well, now we're going to have these two heavyweights going at it to unify the belt, you know, and create some other little thing. It's just weird, man. And it's just they've ruined even the sense of what an interim used to mean something. Now it is nothing more than, oh, hey, it's a pay-per-view card that needs to have a headliner. You know, it's just sort of weird, man.
It's interesting, right? Because you bring up some really good points that I do think, like, the value, I mean, even the interim belts, which I always say the interim belts never meant anything anyway, because you look at most people who get them, the first thing they do is, like, throw them on the ground and say, yeah, I don't even want, you know, look at Justin Gaethje. He's like, I don't even want this. I want the real one. It's like, dude, yep, that is a belt. Like, it does count. You know what I mean? But, you know, so you're right about that. Like, the value, if there was any, is gone. But it is funny when you look at it, because if I hear what you're saying, right, you'd have been totally fine with, you know, Derek Lewis versus Cyril Gane as a main event of that pay-per-view, or even, I guess, maybe a co-main event of that pay-per-view, because if it wasn't for a title, see, that's what I'm seeing is interesting, right? Because the marketing view of, okay, we got Nunes and Pena for the belt in the main event, and our co-main event is a big number one contender fight between Lewis and Gane. The winner gets Francis Ngannou.
That would have worked.
That
for
sounds
me.
Good, but when that you're like,
that would work.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but I guess does it work for the common fan versus flipping it around and going, our main event is an interim heavyweight title. You know, and your second title fight is Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena. You know, to the common fan, even though that's literally the exact same two fights,
right,
with literally the exact same stakes, because the winner is going to get Francis Ngannou, to the casual fan, does that seem like a whole different event, and therefore I'm more willing to spend my $50.
That's true. Nowadays, I wonder, is there even really still casual fans? You're either a fan or you're not. I feel like casuals only come in when Conor McGregor fights. Then you get the people that are like off to true. The side that are like, hey, I'm going to pay attention to the UFC. When you got like Amanda Nunes, Juliana Pena, Derek and Ciryl Gane fighting, the people that are going to tune in aren't casuals by any means at this point. Maybe the people locally.
True. Those are two hardcore fights, right?
Maybe the people in Houston that are going to go watch the fight. Maybe you're going to have some stragglers that are like, oh, hey, this is going on in town. Let me go watch it. That would maybe qualify as like a casual. Nowadays, this what was a small niche sport has gone mainstream. It's not as big as the other ones. But I feel like now, especially with this fight, this isn't something that casuals are going to tune into. It's still going to be people that have been following the sport that are involved with the athletes. And I think those people would have been fine if it was completely the other way. You know, if it was Amanda and them first, because those people are going to understand. They're going to be like, that's a legit title fight. This is the battle to make sure that this is the person that gets it next. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is the number one contender fight. This is the guy that was slated to fight the current title holder. They couldn't make it work. And this is the other guy that everybody was like, oh, man, this is the guy also going to give him a run for his money, you know?
Yeah, you know what I was just thinking is you're saying that. Because what I laid out, the difference in pay-per-view price, you know, the difference in pay-per-view sales, I bet that's what the UFC was thinking. It's like, hey, it'll carry more weight if we make it an interim title, and then we can make it the main event, because we can't make it the main event if it's a non-title fight. But what you're saying is so true. You could sell that so good. You know, Derek Lewis, he had a title fight, but he wanted to fight in Houston. It meant so much for him to fight in Houston. Ciryl Gane thinks he's undefeated. He deserves it more than Derek. He thinks Derek doesn't deserve it, and Derek stepped up and said, you know what? I know I have a title shot, but I'm willing to defend my place in line in my hometown for my people to prove that I wasn't given anything to fight for Francis Ngannou. I already deserved it. I'm thinking about it now, man, like hearing those storylines.
And he could be like the champ's running from me right now. I'll get to him when I'm done with this jump, you know? It would have just kept
building.
You're
so right. You could sell that.
You could sell it.
Oh, that, I like that storyline better than the interim storyline. Well,
I didn't like
the interim anyway.
But that's the thing. I mean, how do you sell the interim? How can you, with a straight face, justify creating an interim belt? I don't get it. Like, there's no justification in my mind outside of, oh, hey, well, we really needed to have another title fight for this to kind of, you know, because we've been doing like two title fights on pay-per-views, guys. It's in Houston. You know, we wanted to have the biggest star from Houston fight. So we thought we'd make an interim because we couldn't wait another 4 weeks.
Not quite as exciting, is it?
That fucking, it's, I mean, again, I'm torn in the sense that I'm super, super happy for Derek. If this allows him and them, even with an interim thing, if he, should he get the win, to have bigger paychecks, to maybe redo his contract, all that other sort of stuff that allows him to financially do stuff. I dig it. I'm happy for that. For the sport itself and for the shit that it's doing to Francis, I respect Francis as well. I love his story. Jesus, fuck. Just let him have his victory lap and then let him fight. The fact that we're talking about a matter of weeks, you know, before when he was ready to fight, they were ready to go in September. What is it? September 25 was what they were targeting. September 24th. Something roughly around those lines. It's just, man, it's just, I understand from the business aspect why they're doing it. But as a fan and as somebody that respects both parties involved, it's shitty. It's shitty. And there's no justification for it. There really, really isn't. How do you sell this? How can you possibly sell this outside of it's just two of the baddest men around that didn't want to wait? You know,
you know, it's funny. Sorry. So I was originally supposed to talk to UFC president Dana White today. I had an interview scheduled with him, and I was looking forward to asking him about it and seeing what he explained. That unfortunately got rescheduled, we'll say, hopefully not canceled. So I'm supposed to talk to him next week. I imagine a lot of people will be asking about it next week, so I'm sure we'll get his answer next week. But I guess the big key will be, as exactly what you just said, is how quickly do these guys, whoever wins out of this fight, how quickly are they ready to turn around? Because if they'll turn around and fight in November, maybe even December, then I don't feel so bad. But you're right. If Francis Ngannou now has to wait until March or something to compete again, that's a problem, you know. And that means a real issue. The last thing I want to ask you about this, and you know, because, you know, as a former UFC employee, I guess we should say that Francis Ngannou's agent, if anybody didn't know, is a former UFC employee. I believe he worked in sponsorship and advertising packages. Do you think that plays into any of this at all? Like, there's maybe some beef or I will say this. It started to get a little nasty online, and I thought, you know what, this is not going to help anybody if this thing gets into this, you know, this personal back and forth stuff. It goes back to kind of what we've been talking about with John Jones all this time, right? Like, hey, man, take these negotiations behind closed doors, because if you're trying to negotiate this stuff out in social media, it ain't going to work out good for you.
Yeah. I thought maybe, if anything, Markel felt more emboldened to stand up for himself, being a person that, you know, had worked with him before and, you know, wasn't afraid to stand up for his fighter, stand up for himself when he felt that his judgment and that his scruples are being, you know, scrutinized. I mean, Markel was a great coworker. I mean, he was a good dude. He worked his butt off. You know, so I don't feel like he's also was like, oh man, we don't want to piss him off. We don't want to whatever. Let's just do what we need to do, and we'll get the next contract, and then we'll do it. He is in a position where I think a lot of us, when we're left shaking our heads, like, why are they doing what they're doing? Why could they possibly be doing this? He's in a position to actually do something about it, in the sense of, you could either just say, okay, you're right, we're just gonna go with your timeline, we're just gonna do it, okay, I get it. Or you can be like, no, I have a chance to say, no, sir, we are not going to accept that. This is what we want. This is what we're owed. This is what you need to do. He's in a position to stand up for himself and to stand up for his fighter, and that's what he's chosen to do. And I don't think what he's doing it is being, you know, crazy or shifty. I just know that if he really wanted to, if he'd been at any of the old holiday parties and other stuff that I went to, he has plenty of dirt about the company that he could bring up, and he's chosen not to. So for him to be able to stand up for himself and to do it in this manner, he's doing it fine, and good on him for standing up for himself and standing up for his fighter. And he's not going low. He's not being shitty about it. He's not bringing up stuff that it's just like, okay, you're just bringing this up to be a dick. He's chosen the high road, and he's standing up for himself.
I was going to say, I felt like it was about to go there, though. That's what I guess I was worried about. Let's see what direction this is going
to
go in.
It was good on him to hint it and say, you know, hey, you're not the only one that can say shit. You know, like, I can bring stuff up as well. You know, like, defame me. You know, say I'm doing something shitty. I can do the same, you know. And once he said that, and he started
using... Just a little warning shot.
Yeah, little warning shots. I was just like, oh, okay. You know, but... good on him. He was a good dude. Do you know he was on was it The Bachelor at one point? He was on
The Bachelor. That's right. Yeah, I remember he was on The Bachelor.
Back in the day. I remember because he was able to take time off of work for it. And I was like, man, I wish I could take time off or something. But ain't nobody want me on The Bachelor. They'd have to have a show called, like, the, I don't know, The Buffet Dudes. Like, put him on The Buffet Dude show. How many churrascarias can he eat in one day? And then what hot chick wants to get with him? None.
While he's got the meat sweats.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that show, man, premise could go funny, really far. We could have fun with that one.
All right. Well, listen, those were kind of the biggest stories, but there's others to talk about as well. But listen, I had a chance to do some interviews this week, and I wanted to share those with you. First was with USC Hall of Famer Boss Rudin. He was actually promoting Karate Combat Season 3 of that show debuts tonight, actually. If you're listening to this on a Thursday, it's tonight. If you listen to it on Friday, like I'm sure a lot of people do, it will have already aired, but I'm sure you can find the replay and highlights of it online. But Karate Combat Season 3, Cole Coffey and I had a chance to go to a Karate Combat event at one time. They're unique. unique. They're fun. It's in, you know, having Bosch Rutten involved is a big thing, and they also got Lyoto Machida and George St. Pierre involved as brand ambassadors as well. So they're trying to do big things moving over to the CBS Sports Network. But of course, if you get Bosch, you know, on the phone or on a video call, as it may be, you're going to talk to him more than just about karate combat. So we talked about just kind of the state of combat sports, and you know, he's obviously a sharp mind that's been a part of this community for a long time, a lifelong martial artist, an incredible fighter, man. If you never got a chance to see Bosch, you know, during his glory days, man, I understand if you're a newer fan to the sport, you might never seen it. It's worth going and watching his highlights, man. This guy was an absolute stud, and he's done great jobs with commentary and broadcast and stuff since. So, and the dude's just high energy, man. You can't beat him. I don't know if there's a more fun dude to be around in the sport, man. He's just nonstop. So here's my conversation with Bosch Rutten.
UFC Hall of Famer Bosch Rutten. I mean, listen, Bosch, I know you've had a lot of honors over your career, and I know it's been 6 years since you went in the Hall of Fame, but is that still a cool honor to hear, man? I mean, the biggest organization in the world says you're one of the greatest to ever do it.
Dude, it's really amazing. Yeah, because, you know, that is solidifies everything, right? That's like – and I wasn't expecting it. I truly wasn't expecting, because I only fought two fights in the UFC. So I thought maybe, hopefully, later in my career, because I was kind of an ambassador for the sports and they put everything together. And then Dana said, no, we judge you on every single fight, also the fights in Pancras, because I beat some UFC champions that came over to us. So, yeah, that was unexpected and was very welcomed.
Yeah, no question about it. The Pancras area, I got to be honest with you, Pancras is what kind of launched my love for MMA, man. Such a wonderful organization. Do you feel like sometimes maybe they don't get the, I don't know, the respect or the knowledge? It seems like only the hardcore old schoolers really know what that era was about.
Yeah, I think that if you look how many guys from Pancras became UFC champions, it's pretty freaking gnarly. You know, we were a small organization. Well, a big organization, but compared to Pride Fighting Champions, for instance, we were not as big. But, you know, that little group of guys, I mean, we had like 6 or 7 UFC champions in a very short amount of time, all before 2000. You see, so I think they did something right. And I truly believe it's the rules. I always wanted to fight without shoes and without everything. You know, it was kind of modified for the Japanese fighters. They're really good with leg locks. You know, striking is a little bit less. Okay, let's do open hand strikes. If you get still chokes on, let's put shoes on. Nice for leg locks. Oh, I already said that. But you see, it was kind of tailor-made for that. And but what the great thing was the rope escapes. And the people go, yeah, but that's not real. I know. But if you treat it like if you would take a rope escape, in my feeling, I would have lost. That's how I would treat it to myself. But now the fight continues. So what happens is if you look at my submission victories, I have 15 submissions, I believe, or 14, and then like 12 knockouts. And but from the 14 submissions, I have officially have like 41 submissions. So what happens in a fight, yeah, you get somebody in a submission, but he can't touch the rope. Now you restart the fight on the feet again. That's a second fight. So you have more ring time. I had one fight that I had 5 submissions. That was the total amount. 5 submissions in a half-hour fight. That was a 27-minute fight. I broke my head. See, that was the first punch I gave. I broke my head. But I submitted him 5 times. Well, that's 5 fights, because after a submission, every time you stand back up, you know, so you have more ring time. And I truly believe that's why these guys were so successful later in the UFC and the Pride Fighting Championship.
I'll tell you what, man, it was a great era. I encourage anybody that never watched it to go check it out. You know, guys like Funaki and Suzuki, I mean, they were amazing fighters. And, of course, obviously you had a lot of great success. Bosch, how much – are you still an MMA fan? I mean, I know you don't have a weekly show to break down where you have to watch everything anymore. So, I mean, do you still watch a lot of MMA?
Yes, I still do. You know, with my students, I like to join them if they got a pay-per-view or something. It's always fun because then everybody gets rowdy and talking to some of the female students. They go completely crazy. Fuck! They're screaming out. It's so funny. I go, whoa. And in class, they're like really, really timid, you know, and then you see them completely change. So, yeah, no, I do. And especially the shows. I'm looking forward, of course, to next week, McGregor-Poirier. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, no question. What do you think, Bosch, about the kind of the era that we're in MMA? I mean, this is I feel like a lot of people call it like the entertainment era, right? I mean, I think if you know, you were a showman for sure. I mean, obviously, you know, the kicks in the ring and, you know, you played to the crowd, but not like now where there's so much trash talk and obviously social media is a big thing and all that. Yeah. Yeah, what do you think? Is it good or bad? Because, I mean, the sport's certainly growing in popularity, but then I hear people too that say, yeah, but we're getting away from what made it what it was, which was really about, you know, the fights themselves and the athletes and the skill and that sort of thing. What do you think about the era that we're in now?
Well, we're in that era. There's nothing you can change about it. So you can complain about it, but guess what? It's like bad people in traffic. I get really aggravated about it. But guess what? It will never change. So either I change and accept it, or otherwise nothing is going to happen. And that's the same with here. You know, these guys, well, it is here, and it's entertainment. And yes, I think sometimes it goes too far. I think so. I think you should leave family out, religion out. You should, all these things, you should leave it out. And sometimes it just got heated up. But the fighters, I mean, you can't really blame them, you know, if they can't put a lid on their mouth. I mean, the only way they solve problems in the past is probably, like with me, you know, probably been bullied. Something happened to a lot of fighters when they were young, you know. And for me, the language that I understood was that was violence back, you know. So now it becomes that. And then you, every time you see it as an attack, and if you can't hit, what do? You start talking. And then you sometimes you say the wrong thing. So I that's like when somebody's drunk. You know, and he says the worst things. Like if Reese Witherspoon one time got stopped drinking, and she told the cop, "Do you know who I am?" Dude, and then people shitting on her pretty much. And I go like, "Dude, how many? That would be a nightmare for me. I would wake up in the morning in Japan, and I would with a big hangover after the fight, and I would knock on the door for my buddy, and I go, I look at him, I go, "Did I say it?" He goes, "Oh yeah, you said it." You know, please, because then we could go into a bar, and then you know you try everything, and eventually you're gonna go, you know, well, you should hook me up. I go, it is so stupid, but you're drunk and let it go. That's what the same as fighters when they're, you know, aggravated, they can't punch. Well, they start saying things, so give them a pass.
I love it. I love it. How about this, though? You talk about this as just the generation that we're in. What about this? I don't even know what to call it. Are we calling it celebrity boxing or these influencers, you know, that are getting into it? Because I think the argument is, I mean, some of these, like the Paul brothers, they look like they're taking it really serious. I mean, they're actually training. But I think people are frustrated because you say, well, how come they're going and making millions? And then we got fighters that have dedicated their lives that are making, you know, thousands. I mean, what do you think about this? Is this something we just have to accept as well? Or does it frustrate you at all?
Well, no, absolutely not. I think the Paul brothers, first of all, they take it serious, like you said. I think they're doing great. I mean, and they have an enormous audience. You know, they did that. If you can't complain about it, why don't you do the same thing? Start a YouTube channel and get a lot of followers. Guess what? Then you can do exactly the same thing. That's the same with McGregor. People go like, well, but look at him and he makes all that money. Yeah, well, be like him. Good luck with that, by the way, because, I mean, he's a master in promoting. And that's the same with the Paul brothers. I mean, they built themselves up for years now. We're finally there to pick their career. And now they found a way to do something what they love to do, fighting, boxing. And they're actually doing pretty well. I got the huge respect for those guys. I mean, the way against Floyd Mayweather going the distance, in my book, that's pretty admirable.
Yeah, no question about it. I agree. You kind of just got to respect what they're doing. All right, let's talk about what you're doing these days. Karate Combat, Season 3, debuting July 1st, CBS Sports Network for the first time. You've been with this organization for a while. So talk to me, boss. What was it about, you know, this organization or the sport in itself, you know, the rule set? What is it about it that drew you in?
Well, they called me all the way from the beginning, and they said, hey, we need an ambassador for the sport. And since you come from karate background, would you like to be our ambassador? I said, for what is it? They said, well, it's in a full contact karate league. I go, whoa, okay, don't say anymore. I want to do it. And then I found out the pit and the way it's shaped and the way we're filming. That was all add-ons for me. That was the icing on the cake. But since it was one of my first sports, my second actually, I only did taekwondo for like 2.5 months, and then I knocked out a bully in school and my parents took me off. But then the next sport for me when I moved out of the house was karate. It was a Shintai karate. It was a form of karate. And but now with these guys, knowing that we have Olympic level athletes fighting each other full contact, it's the best. And especially if you see the growth, the evolution. I always talk about it. In the beginning, there were some guys that they would score a punch and they would stop because that's point fighting. Yeah, and then they stop the fight and he gets a point. And then his opponent just kept on going. You know, he goes, oh crap. So all these guys started Thai boxing and boxing and kickboxing on the side now because they realized, hey, I have to start throwing combinations. But if you're talking about Olympic level athletes and they start suddenly learning the striking game, I mean, you're going to be surprised. There's some really good fighters. There's a guys that I mean, there's almost like the Matrix. They see things before it comes. They're ducking the kicks. They're moving to the side on punches. I mean, it's really cool. And especially with the walls, the 45-degree angle walls that you can use to your advantage. You can literally jump on them and come with a flying punch or a flying kick. You can use it if you get in the corner, pushed in the corner, you can simply run out. And now you're back of this corner. And another great thing is there's an eight count, not an eight count, there's a ground rule. So if you take your opponent down, you can rain down strikes for 5 seconds. And you're going to really want to use those 5 seconds. So there's going to be a lot of damage thrown. And it's just 5 seconds. Now, if you fall with your back against the wall, that is not considered down. So you can do anything if I'm laying on my back. But then again, of course, if he leans over, I can kick from my back. I can use now my back against the wall, so I got more power in my kicks. But you see, that makes it very interesting. We already saw a knockout by way of slam. You know, so things starting to come together. And all these guys that we have do Kubo, do a sport that already has submissions wrestling in it, and you see those guys excel because out of the blue suddenly they throw in a takedown. Now you throw your opponent out of the game, because what is it going to be? It's going to be another strike attack or a takedown, you see, and that's what everybody now starts doing.
I was going to ask, because I haven't had a chance to see any of season three yet, but does it feel like, because it almost feels like MMA in a way, the early days of MMA, right, where everybody was coming from different styles, and then it got blended together with this rule set, and people had to learn all those rule sets. Now, granted, this doesn't have as much groundwork, of course, in the Brazilian jiu-jitsu and that sort of thing, but does it feel like those early days of MMA where the sport is kind of evolving right in front of your eyes?
Yeah, in that aspect it is. Of course, and with the different styles, you have all different karate styles, and that's cool to see. Goju Ryu, and you see Shotokan, and you see Kyokushin, you know, the Kyokushin guys, of course, they're used to full contact, but they almost, when they fight like in a phone booth, that's what I call it. They're very close, and they just kick and punch and do everything from there. Now we have your opponent, if he moves away, well, that whole game plan goes down out the window. So you see, they have to adapt, the other ones have to adapt. Yeah, but like you said, the evolution to see how they use the cage and how they get familiar with full contact, because previously they only been doing semi-contact.
That's yeah, no question. And by the way, I mean, obviously a big enough name with Boss Rutten already involved, but now you're bringing in guys like George St. Pierre, yeah, Lyoto Machida. Talk about their involvement. What exactly are they doing as well, and what did they think when they first got exposed to this?
Well, they also are ambassadors. You know, they were talking about who to bring on board. And I said, why don't you try George St. Pierre? You know, I think that's a really big name. You're thinking Canada. I said, well, I can send him a text. So I sent George a text, and he calls me back immediately. And he goes, dude, I just needed to talk to you because I've been watching this organization. I love this organization. He says, money-wise, I don't have to do anything. He says, I just want to pick projects that I really enjoy doing. And he says, and this I would love enjoy doing. Boom. So we got him on board. And then, you know, Lyoto, the same thing. You know, they reached out to Lyoto, and he got him on board, which is freaking awesome. And Lyoto, I got to say, man, this guy, the knowledge he throws in, and the sayings, and the defenses, all, and he's all the Japanese terms from it. Like with punches and kicks and all that, I use Japanese terms so people at home can learn about it. But he knows it with techniques and how do I say it? Different styles and certain moments to build up. He got all these crazy. And when you're around Lyoto, you know, if you're a hyper guy like me, he automatically calms you down. I don't know what he has. He has that Zen thing, that real Bushido karate thing. And I love the guy. And the same George. It's such a pleasure to work with both these guys. They're not difficult at all. You know, if there needs to be an extra little hour done here and there for promotion, they will never complain. You know, I've seen a lot of other guys go, no, I didn't sign up for that. They don't want to do it anymore. But these guys, and I truly believe it's because they have a traditional martial arts background, and that's why they're such a great guys.
I hadn't even thought about it. Those guys are the perfect yin to your yang, right? I mean, they balance you out, man. He's a little calm. Hey, talk to me about the presentation, right? So we've talked about the athletes. We talked about the fighting service. Then the presentation of this thing is so unique, right, with all the CGI, and it's looking like it's in these crazy places. What I'm curious about, Boss, I mean, at first when that was done, I thought that was more of a reaction to the pandemic, right? I mean, we couldn't have crowds. We couldn't have events. So I was like, what a cool way to deal with it. But now, I mean, was that the genesis of it, or was this always the vision, and is this kind of the vision moving forward?
It was not the vision in the beginning, but it was that whole, they had that video game aspect to it. You know, the cameras were behind. It was almost like you're watching a movie. You would see some people in the audience, and the cameras were behind the people. So you see a person standing in front of you, and through them, or two people, you're watching the fight. So I thought that was really cool. The colors, what they did, if the last 10 seconds, it changed colors. And then if the break comes, it again changes colors. And then once you start adding the CGI with the green screen, yeah, then it became really cool. And especially the things that we could do, like last year, we went last season, we went into space, you know, and we're exploring space. This time we went back in time. You know, we found a time machine. You know, they needed to find somebody who could actually want to do it, because, of course, it's very dangerous. I, of course, offer myself up every start. But this is so cool because now, for instance, we go back to Okinawa, all the way back when it was invented, where karate really started, where the roots came from, and who started it and what. So while you're watching the show, you're going to learn a lot about the history of karate as well. Then, of course, there's another part that we're going to push it forward. It's going to be in the 70s or in the 80s. This is where martial arts got a real big push with Seagal and Van Damme and all these guys that come out to Chuck Norris. That was really a big push for martial arts. And then we're also going to look what karate combat is going to look like in the future. And boy, it looks really good.
That's awesome, man. That's great. Well, I'm looking forward to the debut of the season. Boss, talk to me about the athletes, right? I mean, you look up and down the roster, it's a global talent base, right? But you know, people like to cheer for their own, right? People like to cheer for, you know, so American fans are going to want to see American athletes. Do we have a quality roster of American athletes to compete in? Why are we behind? I feel like in America we're behind in the striking sports. Why is that?
Oh, we got a champion. We got Joshua Quayhagen. You know, he's doing American karate. That's kind of a style that he does. The Preacher from Louisiana. I mean, great guy. And man, I mean, the very first fight where I was, he got knocked out. And that was it. After that, he went on a tear, and he's really good. So, yeah, no, we have American fighters. A lot of people signed in as well. We even have fighters from Holland, but some of them were – one of was injured, so he couldn't compete yet. We have Brian van Waasberg, who is from Belgium, but he trains actually in Holland, in Rotterdam. He's also speaking Dutch. It's close to the border where I used to live as well, because then you speak Flemish and you speak Dutch. It's almost the same language with a little bit of a slang. So, yeah, no, they go everywhere. Owen Chelmia, that's a guy from Ireland. And that guy, man, if you see him, or Scotland, you know, it's an Irish kid. When you see that guy coming forward, he will never step back. He only comes forward. And he has to step back. Like in the first round, we go like, there's no way he can hold this up for so many rounds. And this guy doesn't stop. So it's a really interesting guy to watch. Ross Levine, he's making his debut as well. Big, by the way, there's a plug here. A big Bang Muay Thai fan, he said. So that's good. Yeah, so people all over the world are coming. We have a lot of Brazilians as well, but Italy, you name it, we got it. Greece, even.
That's amazing. Well, I guess, boss, what's the pitch then? I mean, obviously, you know, our audience is MMA fans. And yes, there's some combat sports crossover, but, you know, there is a lot of, fortunately, there's a lot of MMA to watch these days. It didn't used to be that way. We were thirsting for combat sports. So what's your pitch? What would you tell people? I mean, a UFC Hall of Famer like yourself that has a passion for MMA as well. What would you tell to a fan that's like, I don't know if I want to watch karate. I'm not sure about that. Why would you tell them, no, this is something you need to watch on CBS Sports Network?
Well, it's full contact, you know, and it's still at the UFC, it's still at mixed martial arts, I should say. You have people who don't like the ground. They don't speak it because they simply don't understand it. It's still there. A lot of people now know that it's super effective, so at least they don't start booing anymore. But if they have a chance, why won't they watch striking? Now you got Olympic-level athletes going at it. You know, what is not to love? And I think the demographic is much larger than with MMA or kickboxing, because if you're a 10-year-old kid, they ask your mom and dad if you can watch the UFC. I don't think they're going to do that. You know, but if he says, hey, can I watch karate? I think the parents might be jumping on the couch with him and watch his show. So I think the demographic is much bigger. I think, again, Olympic-level athletes, these guys are freaking machines. Look at Ronda Rousey. Look what she did in mixed martial arts. You see, so, and we have that in karate. What is not to love? A lot of knockouts, crazy knockouts. We already saw people pushing over flying punches and flying kicks. Actually, we saw off the wall as well. Yeah, please watch it. You will be very satisfied. Trust me.
I love it. I love it. Boss, you said you're looking forward to UFC 264. So before I let you go, any early leans on this big fight, man? Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor 3, the trilogy, one apiece. Big fight, big fight. I know everybody's tuned in. What are you thinking? You got any early leans on this one?
No, you know, I never like to make a prediction because I, you know, I just like both guys and any fighter who steps in, you know, and it's always it's hard when you put one out or point one out, but you know, the things that you have to work on, like for McGregor, I would do more head movement after I strike, because sometimes he get caught, like all the way in the beginning. I think Dustin threw a jab, he countered with a cross, and then Dustin countered that with the cross. Now if this training camp has been looking at that, they might start doing that more often, because you know the cross is kind of coming for McGregor because he's so highly successful with it. Well, if you know it's going to come, you can also find combinations and counters for it. Single kicks, that's Poirier. He throws a lot of kicks out of the blue. I think it's a very dangerous thing to do, you know, and especially now because he probably wants to go after that leg again, but set them up at strike, because McGregor's accuracy is so perfect. You know, if he just throws single kicks, he's going to get countered. Like the show Inside MMA, you know, we did 431 shows, and every single week we had highlights around the world. And every single week, at least one person got knocked out because he threw a single kick. And every single week I was shouting, no single kick. They actually make T-shirts, and people are still doing it. Why not setting it up with some strikes, you know, because otherwise you're going to get knocked out. Proof is in the pudding. So Poirier has to watch out with that, to throw these nice and loose kicks. I wouldn't do that. Set him up with power strikes, because then you put him in a defense, and that's when you can start kicking. So, yeah, it's all about who's going to connect and who's going to enforce his game plan. Is McGregor suddenly does he have a different stance? Is more an open stance? If he's a more open stance like I have, well, you can't give the calf kicks, because then you're going to kick the shin bone, you know? So we're going to have to see the adjustment that he made. Is it enough time to make those adjustments? Because most of the time, like Mike Tyson would say, you know, it might work, but until he gets hit and feels uncomfortable, and then they shoot automatically back into their old style that they've been doing for such a long time. So, yeah, that's about it. I think that Poirier needs to be a little bit more tight with his punches. That's what I would do. And McGregor should add some hooks to his repertoire. He used a lot of straight punches, but a hook here and there I think will be very effective.
That's beautiful. That's a great breakdown right there, boss. I miss Inside MMA, man. That was such a fantastic show. Yeah. And it's because I love hearing stuff like that, man. Great breakdowns from you, boss. But we don't get Inside MMA, but we got Karate Combat Season 3 debuting July 1st, CBS Sports Network. Make sure you tune in. And, boss, this was great. We'll have to do it more often.
I appreciate it, my man. Godspeed, John. Thank you for having me.
All right, that was the one and only Boss Rutten. Listen, I mean, I stand fully in agreement with a lot of things he says about, you know, what's going on in the world of MMA and you know, these influencer fights and everything else. I think I've really, I don't say changed my stance, but I have really come to that position where, you know, even if it's not the most appealing thing to you or the most amazing thing to you, man, I don't know how you can't, you know, respect these guys for what they're out there doing. And, you know, it's just, it's a constant evolution, and it brings attention to sport, and there's always new things. So I can't hate on people for going out there and doing their grind. So anyway, always a pleasure to catch up with Boss. I'll make sure and do that more often, because I enjoy chatting with him. Listen, if you like what you're hearing, do us a favor. Take a second, wherever you're listening, to log in. Make sure you rate us, review us, leave feedback for us if you can. Apple Podcasts is where I listen most. So if you leave feedback there, love to check it out. We really appreciate it. And obviously just sharing it and rating it and telling people about it, man, it helps us kind of grow this thing, our little pet project on the side, myself and Cold Coffee. And of course, if you really want to help us out, if you really like what you listen, you want to take your support to the next level, head on over to patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. You can sign up there for as little as $3 a month to help support us. It'll give you exclusive access to the and a half episodes that we do after every single UFC event. Of course, no UFC event this weekend, so we'll take a weekend off from the and a half. But of course, we're always interacting with people over there. It's kind of a fun little community that we've done. And of course, that takes us straight into the Q&A section this week from our friends over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. Cold Coffee has done a fantastic job of lining up a Q&A session with our most preferred members over there at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. Appreciate that support. And by the way, we didn't have a name for a Q&A segment. I mean, I guess you could just call it the Q&A segment if you like. But Cold Coffee got a little bit creative with it, man. He had like a moment of inspiration.
It was a moment of inspiration.
You hit me up. I'm telling you, man. You hit me up. You were like, dude, I came up with this, and I maybe it's crazy, but I don't know. I think it's good. And I heard it, and I said, you know what? That is clever, Cold Coffee. So would you like to drum roll, please? Official.
Maybe I'll make a jingle for it, or I'll find a good little jingle for it.
Yeah,
or something.
We gotta get a jingle. Gotta
get a little.
There you go.
The roadmap. That's not how the jingle is gonna by any means. But yeah, so we talked about the roadmap, and the roadmap being like, you know, when you're driving along the road, when you're going forward, you know, you look at the map, you're like, where are we gonna go to next? What direction are we gonna go? You know, and I was like, man, we have these people all over the world, you know, from different locations with their thoughts and their desires and where they want to go. And I was like, just let them steer the ship. Let them point the direction. Let them tell us where we're going to go. Put us on the map. Tell us where to go. So that's what the idea was behind the roadmap. So we got some submissions. We got some people that said, you know, I'm going to do it. And currently right now, the roadmap is only open to the stars and the producers, so the $5 and the $10 level. Everybody, you know, feel free to always, you know, sort of send us, you know, questions and thoughts as a week. We will always have an open door to you guys, but we just want to give a little something extra for those that are giving a little something extra to us. So do you want to go ahead and pick which one you want to go on first, John?
I'll start with the first one we got, man, with Daniel. He said, first of all, thank you for putting this together.
And, oh, well, you're welcome, Daniel.
We appreciate you, man, for all the support. Come on. He said, you guys rock. Now, how do you guys see the Ngannou situation playing out? Now, we touched on this a little bit, but I don't think we really touched on where we see the conclusion going. So you tell me, because I guess the biggest concern is this going to be an ugly battle between Francis Ngannou and the UFC? Could it even lead to the John Jones fight happening? Could this turn into a positive somehow? I don't see that happening, so I'm just going to go ahead and rule that one out. I don't think we are actually any closer to a John Jones situation happening. But I think the key will be to see how quickly the winner of this Derek Lewis and Ciryl Gane fight is ready to turn around. As we mentioned earlier, that's going to be the big part of this. If they make a quick turnaround, then look, I think we move past this really quick. We understand this was kind of a business decision. Like you said, Cole Caulfield, if it ends up giving a better contract to Lewis, Gane, both of them, if they end up making a little more money because of this, cool. You know, if the people of Houston end up enjoying seeing their guy competing in there for a title, like, I do think there are positive things about this, but it's all going to depend on how things get handled moving forward. I'm going to hope, and I'm going to hope this doesn't turn dirty. You touched on it there as you were breaking down the Markel Martin situation. I think he kind of threw the warning shot out there and said, hey, if you want this thing to get dirty, we can make it dirty. But he's been kind of quiet since, and it leads me to believe that cooler heads can prevail. So what do you think? Do you think this thing turns out okay, or do you think we're in for an ugly battle between these two moving forward?
I hope not, but I think you're right. I think cooler heads are prevailing. In fact, I tried to reach out to Mark Allen and was like, hey, man, if you want to tell your story, you know, we have an outlet. We can help you do it. And he didn't respond, and I think that was partially probably him saying, I said my piece. Now I need to sit back and be a manager again and take myself out of this equation. I will, stand up for my fighter and do what's right for my fighter. And maybe at this point it means pulling back and taking me a little bit more out of the equation. I hope this doesn't cause anything with Francis. I don't think it will. My whole fear is that I just hope that, you know, Derek and Ciryl, whoever wins this, comes out without injury and is able to kind of not set the time frame too far back, because they're going to need some time to rest. Hopefully that means, all the parties involved take it easy. Who knows, something can happen to Francis in training, that could set it further back, you know. But I think ultimately, I don't think it's going to ruffle some feathers. It's going to cause some discussion, but I think ultimately, I don't think it's going to be too much. We're going to see Francis fight the winner of this, hopefully in short order after the fact, and then we'll be able to kind of move on beyond this. But unfortunately, there's always going to be that little stink mark on the time of history that the UFC chose to make an interim fight when it didn't really need to. But I don't think that's going to sour Francis to the point of where he's going to be trying to not do fights, try to do all these, fun external fights elsewhere, you know, because he's upset and now he's going to just do whatever he wants to do instead of thinking, you know, sort of the division. I think it's going to be a short-term, rather feathers ruffled. I think we'll get back to relatively normalcy. But we just need this fight to happen, get it over with. Hopefully all the parties involved go injury-free. And then hopefully 3 months after that, we're seeing a unification of the belt.
Yeah, I think we've kind of alluded to it, but I think what happened here was the UFC kind of got backed into a corner. I know they'll never admit it or say it like that because they don't ever want to make it seem like they had their hand forced, but they had this deal in place with the city of Houston and they had this date on the calendar and they needed to fill it. And they needed to fill it in the most, you know, appetizing way possible, and this is the way that they went. And I understand if I was in their shoes, I'm not saying I wouldn't make the same decision, but you're right. It's the interim belt is stupid for all the reasons we said. But I think we see Francis Ngannou against the winner of this fight the end of this year, December in Vegas. Big fight on the strip, pay-per-view. And as you said, it's a little hiccup in time, but we've moved past it quickly. So fingers crossed, that's what we end up seeing. All right, DJ Freedom, kind of a little bit similar topic here, but it says, do you see any future consequences to the UFC and the sport of MMA with the UFC's willingness to move on past a fighter when they hold out for more money? We've seen this with Ngannou and Jones, and we nearly saw it with Masvidal a year ago. It seems to be becoming more common in the Endeavor era. Now, there's a lot of ways you can go with this for sure. I think the first thing that stands out to me is, as you said, it's kind of seeming to happen a little bit more. The UFC has made it clear they're not going to allow any one fighter to slow them down. The machine has got to go on. They got dates to fill. They got programming that has to be made. They're not going to stop. They're going to keep holding events. And if you're not willing to go, then the guy right behind you, it's next man up, right? I mean, I think that's what they always say, like in the NFL, it's next man up. You know, well, that's what it is in here too. It's the next man up. And if you're not willing, sorry, baby, we ain't got time to wait. We're going on to the next one up. That's the reality of the situation. That's the UFC's perspective. To me, what you're saying and seeing this over and over should honestly be an alarm for the fighters and what they need to see for a unionization effort, an association effort, an organization effort. You know, they got to get together with each other to prevent it from being this way. The problem is nobody ever looks to establish that help or looks to establish that system until they find themselves in that position. You know what I mean? And then it's too late. So I do think that the fans, or that the fighters, I should say, need to realize, hey, unless we're willing to get together and do something like this, they are going to continue to move on without us. And I'm not blaming the UFC for that either. I mean, the UFC is just running their business. That's what they're trying to do. So I think it should be an alarm. I don't think it will be an alarm, unfortunately. I think that there is always somebody that's willing to go, oh, sorry, that wasn't enough money for you. It's enough money for me. I've never made $1 million before. I'll go in there and make $1 million. And so I think it's tough for the fighters to all get on the same page. Now, I will say, if fans are annoyed by this, if fans are sick of this, the fans can vote with their money, right? They cannot pay for the pay-per-views. But that's tough, man. If this is your thing, you know what I mean? If this is your thing, you know, you want to watch other fights on the card, or you at least, you know, you want to watch the events, you want to tune in. I mean, hey, maybe you just tune in for the prelims. Maybe you just tune in for the – maybe you don't buy, you know, the main card and you wait. And I'm definitely not saying you should go out and pirate it. I'm not trying to say you should go out and do something illegal. But, you know, maybe you don't pay for the ones that you want to prove. Now, again, it's a difficult stand to take. And if you make it by yourself, you know, it's not like they're going to go – you know, we sold 999,999.
What happened
to
that last
Cold Coffee not buy? We thought we were going to do $1 million. Did that one guy, is he pissed off at us and didn't buy it because it's interim title? Oh, we got to change everything now. We were supposed to do $1 million. So it's tough. That's not going to happen either. But I do think exactly what you touched on earlier, Cold Coffee, the biggest thing of it is what you're really doing by some of this is devaluing the meaning of titles and devaluing, you know, what these belts mean and what these championships mean, because, you know, you're making kind of random fights to fill it because you're not making the ones that want. I mean, everybody wants to see John Jones and Francis Ngannou right now. I think I've not heard many cases for why that is not a fight that people want to see.
Guys, that just sounds like it won't be fun. It just sounds like it won't be fun. No, right? It's not for me. No.
I haven't heard a single one, but I do understand too. Again, the UFC is thinking long term about their business, right? And they're saying, man, if we do give John this upfront money that he's asking for, now every other fighter is going to want this upfront money as well. And that's not the way we do business. We do business, you know, with sharing on the back end with, you know, our quote unquote partners, as they like to say it, when the athletes are sharing in the pay-per-view revenue model. So, I would say overall, you know, the question being, do you see any future consequences to the UFC and the sport of MMA? I'll be honest with you, I don't, because there's always going to be somebody willing to step up. I think it should be the alarm bells that fighters see and hear to know that they need to get together if they want it to stop happening. But I just don't – I've been covering the sport professionally for 15 years, and I've seen multiple organization efforts over the years, and they just never go anywhere. And because of that, I don't think it's ever – maybe not ever going to happen, but I just don't see it happening. And – I don't think the UFC is going to slow down, man. They're continuing to grow. They're continuing to sign TV deals all over the world.
Yep.
I guess the only consequence that I see is that maybe people don't really worry about the belt that much anymore. They don't chase the championship anymore because they're more chasing individual fights that they think will be the most profitable, I guess. I don't know. What about you? Any, I mean, do you see God, what they're doing now is destroying the sport?
Yeah, no, and I agree completely. I think you said it great. And the only thing I would say just to add and to touch on kind of what DJ said there is that it does seem to be more common in the Endeavor area, but I think that's partially because this is the time of TV deals. It's the time of ESPN. You know, I would say it was more of like once we got the big TV deal of ESPN that they really started to try to meet these things. But you can't discount the Endeavor as well because the UFC has to answer to somebody now. They have somebody looking at that bottom line. Before, they had a little bit more freedom where they could say, okay, are we free to maybe operate at a lesser budget this year because of this. They have to give returns. Like somebody else is looking at the UFC. While they are able to operate for themselves, they still have to answer to another company when it comes to expenditures, revenues, and things of other sort. You know, he raised a good point that, you know, is it maybe more prevalent now that Endeavor is involved? It could be. It really, really could be. But like you said, I don't think it's, you know, we're going to see any crazy changes until there is a massive mindset change of all the parties involved. You know, if it starts with one person going in there and making sure that their contract is as lock solid in their favor, that they're comfortable so that maybe some of these things can get spelled out in their contract. If something comes up, if there's a dispute, have it better phrased out to how you will deal with these conflicts, if you will, or when time constraints don't work. You know, if you can't make a date, they can't work on a date. Maybe there's a point where both parties involved can't get it, but nobody's really at fault because of either injury or blah blah blah. Maybe that means you can get one fight off your contract. You know, if that can be, that can have a clause or something where it's like, I really say this, you say this. Okay, well, these things have been met. Let's call it a day. I'm going to let you not have to give me one more fight. I'm going to have one less fight that I have to fight out if you have multiple ones. You know, try to find ways to, you know, better make sure that your contract is in your favor so that if, you know, you get sidestepped and then now you're like, man, I'm not getting the fight I want. So now I have to wait 8 more months, but I still got to give him a fight, you know, where it's like, okay, if you're forcing me to wait 8 months and blah, 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 and I don't feel like I'm at fault, you don't think you're at fault. Hey, that's one less fight that I have to get. So now I know that I'm still having, you know, if you want to maybe pull that thing, because then you could, you know, say you have 3 fights and they do something and you're like, man, now I got to wait 8 more fights and I still now am stuck with this contract for 3 more fights. Whereas if there's certain, you know, things are met, you know, like, okay, let's call this fight a scratch. Now we have 2 left. Whereas, you know, because if you're not liking the way that they're dealing with you, you're able to get out quicker and you can go elsewhere. If they're not giving you the contract that you want beforehand, that's tough because you want to fight for the premier organization, which pretty much everybody agrees is the UFC. But at some point you have to better, you know, maybe get locked down what you want in a contract and what you're willing to concede, but also things that you're not willing to give up that you deserve as a contractor and as a fighter that's providing the goods. And if, you know, if it starts there, and I think if more fighters start trying to make sure that what they have is good, I think that would start spreading. And eventually, yes, until fighters collectively agree that certain practices can't be done by the overall promotion, that it's just not right. Until they all figure that out and stand up together, they have to find a way to do it on their own individually. But nothing's really going to change anytime really shortly.
And I agree, because exactly what you said there is until they do it together. Because the problem is what you said is a pretty interesting little argument, like a little clause to work in there, which I think is a great thing to ask for. Now, who knows if the UFC would grant it, but let's say they did. but they only grant it for one guy. You know what I mean? And right. Now it's just that one guy, and that one guy never tells anybody. Like, nobody else even knows to ask for that, where it's like, oh, right. you can ask? That is a good idea.
It would be the managers, right? Because it would be like the Ali right. clause, because Ali would do it for every one of his fights.
Right.
You know, and some other manager right. would do it for every one of his fighters. But you're right. I don't think the managers and agents do a
but
good job.
But then Ali's never going to share the idea with Malky, and Malky's never going to share the idea.
That's it. They all like, oh, I got my stuff. My fighters come to me because I can do this for them. Whereas, like, yep. you know, even that could be collectively done differently if there was more of a sort of a brain dump of what's happening and say, you know, just so people could do that. You know, I mean, I think more and more fighters should talk. Nobody wants to talk about pay. Nobody wants to feel like they're making less than others. But if there are things out there that you're figuring out and you're like, man, I wish I figured this out 10 years into my career, that you could save somebody else and be that good bro, you know, that's helping somebody out along their way. I would do that. I mean, I certainly don't try to shit on every fucking fantastic shooter or editor out there that's coming up after me just because I know it someday this person's going to be better than me. Nah, man, like mm-hmm. help the next generation, help the people that are in your field to get better. And in turn, karma's going to reward you for that, man. So in this, and, you know, granted, karma doesn't pay bills. Better contracts no. and better other stuff no. does. But, you know, you would hope that collectively as a whole, the industry would start looking after the industry better. And I think once people understood that collectively they are stronger together when they do these better things, and it spreads out, and then it, like a little fire starting, once it goes, before you know it, I mean, that little bonfire becomes a huge fire, and then it flames everybody to get better, you know? But it's one little thing, you just never know what the catalyst is going to be. You know, it could be any of these times that they right. do something that could be. So you never know what could come from even this one, you know? But collectively as a whole, once I think fighters start working for the benefit, maybe it doesn't even mean to be a union right off the get-go, but start figuring out what you guys are doing that's working and share that knowledge and then watch it spread a little bit. And then eventually when everybody understands that maybe, hey, we're all in this together, then you actually will try to do something together, and then you will stand up for each other, and then you will get your union. You know, but, you know,
it's so interesting, right? I mean, John Jones obviously is frustrated right now. Francis Ngannou is frustrated right now. We'll see how long that lasts. But, you know, if John Jones hadn't given away the title, you know, and you had your light heavyweight champion and potential greatest of all time, and your heavyweight champion and scariest dude on the planet, and they're trying to make a fight, but they can't get it done. And that, you know, could they have been the catalyst working together instead yep. of working against each other, you know, yep. instead of saying, hey, man, why are you scared? Why are you running? Sign the contract. You know, if they had been able to come together behind the scenes, those two guys in particular, could they have been the catalyst, you know? And maybe they still could at this
still
point.
Can.
I don't know.
You never know. You never know.
You got to work together, though. You got to work together, even with people that you might think are your enemy, and even with people that you might need to punch in the face. You got to work with them. So we'll see. Interesting question. All right, Joe Lucenti. He says, look, Frank Shamrock is my all-time favorite fighter, and I've been asked how successful he would be in the modern MMA, and I think Frank could be anyone in the middleweight division, including Adesanya. Now, I'm not going to guarantee he would win every time, but he definitely would be highly successful. So my question to you guys is, what fighter in his prime from back in the early days of MMA could be successful or even a champion in today's MMA, especially with modern-day training and new skills that can be learned? And Joe said, and yes, I'm older than you guys. No, I'm not telling my age. Hey, it's okay, man. You could be a Frank Shamrock fan. The first UFC I ever went to was UFC 16. It was headlined by Frank Shamrock and Igor Zinoviev. So that was the very first UFC. So I'm a Frank Shamrock fan, too. And you know what? I agree. Frank Shamrock was a guy that was kind of ahead of his time in a lot of ways, and I think he would be very successful in today's. Now, we're talking prime. We're not talking about right now, you know what I mean, at his age. But we're talking about a vintage, you know, Frank Shamrock, I think, could be successful in the modern era. And again, you're talking about especially with modern-day training and new skills that can be learned because we've seen how fast this sport has gone. You know, you saw when Hoist came back to fight Matt Hughes, and Matt Hughes just absolutely dominated him. You know, you could see right there in front of your eyes how quickly the sport had evolved. So, you know, you've got to say that they could they could evolve as well along with it. So a couple names that popped in my mind when I started thinking about this. The first one that popped in my head Marco Huas. I think Marco Huas was a phenomenal athlete with a little bit of a mean streak, great skills, legendary in his toughness on the streets as well as in the cage. When he debuted in the UFC, he was already 34 years old. So, I mean, not ancient by any stretch of the imagination, but not a young guy when he came to the UFC. So I think, you know, if you had gotten Marco Huas into you know, real MMA training, you know, in his early 20s or hell, maybe even late teens, the way things are now, the guy had such an amazing skill set. I think Marco Huas would have been successful in today's modern era. I think Oleg Taktarov would have been. Man, that dude was just as durable as they come. Incredible grappling. You know, great sambo. You know, judo, BJJ. I mean, had it all. And I think, you know, with his toughness, his durability, his grappling skills, I think he could have been successful in the modern game. Don Fry was another one that came out. You know, a guy that, I think 31 when he made his MMA debut, but, you know, had a boxing background, had a wrestling background, had great athleticism. Again, toughness, durability, a little bit of a mean streak.
Had a power stash.
So those three. Yeah, in the stash. I mean, that's marketability right there, man. You're telling me. So I think those three were the names that came out at me first that I thought, man, I'd love to see them competing in today's modern game. I mean, look, Boss Rutten, a guy that we talked to earlier. I mean, Boss would certainly be successful in the modern game. But I was kind of thinking back to the real, real early ones. Now here's a couple of other names that I will say that I thought about. Tank Abbott. Would Tank Abbott be successful in today's modern era? Now, listen, we're not talking about a phenomenally well-rounded fighter, but in the heavyweight division, you know, having that one shot, kill strength that he had. I mean, he did have some defensive wrestling, but you know, could knock people out in one division. And look, the heavyweight division, we always say that's a division that's not necessarily incredibly deep, right? And if you have that one shot power, Francis Ngannou is getting better and better, but he wasn't always a well refined fighter. You know what I mean? Now, granted, his physique looked a little bit different than Tank Abbott's, but you know, he wasn't necessarily the most refined fighter. He was wild, but if he caught you, you were done. So a wild card there, Tank Abbott. Now, I'm not saying he would be the most well rounded guy. I'm not saying he'd be champion, but I think his power would still translate to the modern game. And he would knock some people out. Now he would definitely be a one round guy where you're like, I just got to get past his first 5 minutes and we're good after that. But that one, and then a couple other names that I thought about as well were guys like Mark Kerr and Mark Coleman because of their incredible wrestling. Although with both of them, now if we're in the modern era and the USADA era, maybe not so much. Maybe the USADA era might be a little tough for them. But I mean, those guys were next level wrestlers, and I do still think, you know, next level wrestling can still be very, very useful for you in MMA. So listen, I stole a bunch of names there, but those are the ones that stood out to me as far as early era guys. Cole Coffey, you got a name that comes to mind?
I mean, there's only
bounced one off me the other day that
there's
I thought
only
was pretty
one
funny.
Name. There's only one name, and it's the one and only Art One Glove Jimerson from UFC 1. Think about it. Think about it.
Now, and this it sounds ridiculous, but think about it.
In the age of crossovers, how about a guy that boxes and does MMA? Where have we heard this recently? And what better, in today's social media day, imagine a guy showing up for a fight with one glove on his hand. And then you could just have t-shirts about it. You know, and Jake Paul, the Paul brothers, would be scrambling to fight him. But imagine if this guy actually learned some MMA and then still having his boxing. But, you know, we could tweak the look. The dude would be a superstar. He would be an absolute social media superstar right now. If he came out how he did at UFC 1 with the whole act, the whole just like weird sight of it, I think it would be absolutely it would be fantastic. He would be a TikTok superstar at this point. And the fact that he could actually get some real training, because back then people thought what like Gracie was doing was like magic. It was like
yes,
voodoo. It was like, we don't understand this. This is crazy. I don't get it. But if he could actually get some defense, some little jujitsu, you know, the glove would be a stick part, but you know, maybe he could try to fight with it. I don't know, it'd be kind of weird, but just the whole look of him right now, if he would come out right now, the Paul brothers would be scrambling to fight him. He would be an absolute superstar because of social media and what people would do. So I know that's not quite the best answer because it's not just about
what
he would transfer for
the
skills, but he would be absolutely huge right now if he was in the MMA game
right
now.
It's funny. It's coming at it from a different perspective than I was looking at it, but the answer is so true because you're so right. I mean, the dude is still one of the most iconic, you know, images. I mean, anybody that knows UFC 1 will even if they don't know the name, they'll be like, what was that guy that wore
the
one boxing
glove
or whatever? It's like,
that was 1993.
Yes, everybody knows.
So let me do the math.
And people still talk about almost it, man. So you're so right about 20, it. You're it so right. Look at the crossover fights. The social media influencer, man. It sounds like you're just being goofy and giving a funny answer.
It is goofy and funny, but it would be super true. It would be absolute gangbusters right now. Imagine, I mean, because you want to talk about what social or just like the, you know, the casuals, if you will, of people that just maybe hear MMA when they see it in the headline from whatever news outlet. If they're reading it and say, man shows up to MMA fight wearing one boxing glove and not, and, you know, whatever, something, you could spin it. I'm not a headline writer. People would be like, what? Let me watch this. And next thing you know, you got 20 million
viral
views.
It'd be viral.
It would be super viral.
It'd be viral.
If
that's
yeah.
That's amazing.
If
that's
what
amazing.
He did, he would be huge right now in today's terms. So, but he could benefit certainly as well, learning some MMA that has changed the game since then. Everybody in that contest looked ridiculous in terms of compared to everybody. Wasn't there like a ninjutsu guy in there as well? If I remember right.
UFC 2. Yeah, UFC 2.
Fucking crazy. How different we
it is. It is funny when you go back. You know. When you go back, you're so right, man. I don't think people now, maybe that came to the game late, can understand just how revolutionary it was. As you said, it was like Royce Gracie was doing magic. We were like, what are they teaching in Brazil? Yeah. What is going on? So amazing. All right. Well, thank you to Daniel, DJ Freedom, Joe Lucente. Those were some fantastic questions. Cold Coffee, do you have the closing jingle for the roadmap?
roadmap. Yeah. Sounds like I'm having
high
like a stroke.
Level production here.
It's like I'm having a stroke. Roadmap.
I think Cold Coffee just shut off. I don't know what happened there. It's amazing. Well, listen, when you tune into the MMA Roadshow, you like the quality banter. You like the interviews. And, of course, you know, on a week that we bring you a UFC Hall of Famer, you would say, well, that's strong. But, no, we bring you two UFC Hall of Famers. I had a chance to sit down and speak with Rashad Evans earlier as well, UFC former UFC light heavyweight champion and now unretired and active fighter. And Rashad, speaking of the crossover, is looking to get in that crossover game. So let's hear from Rashad. You will hear, I'll just warn you up front, and this is probably most people don't even care. You will hear a change in his microphone at one point. His battery died, and so the audio sounds a little bit different in the beginning and the end. I probably shouldn't even say anything because most
unacceptable.
People don't care. But I care.
Unacceptable.
I care. I want you to know that I acknowledge it. I apologize for it. It was out of my control, but I want you to know that I do acknowledge it. And, accept my humblest apologies. But I like talking to Rashad Evans. It's been a long time since I caught up with him. So I thought, even with that difference in microphone that's going to annoy the piss out of me, I still wanted to share that conversation with you. So here's Rashad Evans.
Rashad Evans, UFC Hall of Famer, UFC analyst, and now, once again, an active fighter, man. It sounds so crazy to hear. I'm happy about it. But tell me, I mean, why the decision to come back? And I got two theories. One, the psychedelics are really setting in, man. Or two, the new baby means I got to get some more paychecks coming in. So what was the motivation for coming back?
A little bit of both, man. And just, wanting to just, you know, go out and have fun again. You know, I want to be able to end my career the way that the way I brought it in, which is with his enjoying fighting. I felt as the last few fights that I had in my UFC career, I just wasn't mentally there. You know, I wasn't really engaged and I really wasn't invested in fighting like I know that I can be. So it was something that I knew that once the smoke settled, as far as my emotions concerned, you know, with competing, that I'll want to compete again. And now I'm to the point where, you know, I'm happy again in life. I'm enjoying the process of training and you know, helping guys get in shape. You know, I got Greg Hardy in camp right now, and I got a couple other guys that I'm in camp that I have a camp. And, you know, I'm enjoying the role as coach and as a coach. But, you know, as coaching people, I started to get in shape. And once I got in shape, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I can still do this a little bit.
That's awesome, man. When you look back on that, you know, you say you kind of didn't really enjoy it. I mean, was it just burnout? Because I do remember that part, man. It just seemed like you weren't, I don't know, you were, like you said, you weren't enjoying it anymore. Like, you didn't like being there anymore. So do you think it was just, was it burnout with the sport or burnout with the UFC? Or was it, were there things going on outside the sport? When you look back on it, do you know what it was?
You know, it was a combination of things. It was burnout with the sport, burnout with a lot of things in my personal life, you know, having, being on that roller coaster, that up and down roller coaster, you know, having fought for titles and, you know, being in the mix of competing for so long and just dealing with the ups and downs of the fight game, you know, it kind of just wears on you after a while. And after a while, you just like, you lose the gratitude of competing. You know what I'm saying? Fighting just stops, you know, being what it was. You know, when you first get the UFC contract, you just feel so honored to just be able to go out there and fight and display, you know, your skill set, your talents in the sport that you love. And towards the end, I was just like, I just couldn't get out of there fast enough. You know, I just really didn't, you know, want to be there. And I really didn't live the life of a fighter who really wanted to be in there, because a fighter who wants to be in there, a fighter who wants to excel at the next level, they never stop training camp. They're always consistently training. They're always consistently raising their level to the highest.
So you, I guess to be clear, I mean, this isn't a decision that you made quickly. I know you were talking about this, I mean, as far back as like September 2019, I think, is when the news came out that you had, you know, been released from your contract, parting ways with the UFC.
Yeah.
What slowed things down? Was it just the pandemic that slowed things down between then and now? Or why is it taking so long to think about the idea to now get to this point where it's like, no, we're chasing after this?
Yeah, it was a pandemic that kind of slowed things down. But it was also the fact that, you know, I really wasn't in a hurry to make the decision, you know, and that's another reason why it's just kind of taken as long as it has, is because, you know, I allowed myself to go through the feelings, to go through the gambit of emotions, you know, wanting to compete, not wanting to compete, understanding what that commitment is really like, and understanding, you know, it's more than just a verbal commitment. You know, it's something that you really have to mentally be engaged in and really want to do on every single aspect and every single level, because, you know, it's hard being a professional fighter. It's hard going out there and dedicating your life to go out and be the best that you can be on fight night. So it was one that I wanted to take my time, and I wanted to be for the right reasons. You know, I feel like right now, you know, everything that has happened around COVID has kind of put some things in perspective and really just allowed me to just see life in a different kind of way and just see the opportunities, you know, that come along with life in a different kind of way. And, you know, I would love to be able to go out there and just have another fight, you know, maybe another two fights and fight from a place where I can be proud of, you know, fight from a place where it's about fun. It's about enjoying the process and not just being there to just pick up a check.
Yeah, I guess I should ask. I mean, because boxing seems to be all the rage these days right now, right? I mean, everybody's crossing over. And, you know, I know you're a wrestler growing up, but you got some hands. You may have had a knockout or two along the way. So are we talking an MMA fight, or are we talking a boxing match?
I mean, we can be talking an MMA fight, but particularly speaking, I'm talking a boxing match right now. You know, I would love to do one of these boxing matches, one of these celebrity boxing matches. You know, particularly with Logan Paul, you know what I'm saying? I know that fight's on the table, and, you know, it's just a matter of Logan Paul wants to take it, you know? You know, I put my hat I put my name in the hat, and we'll see what happens. You know, we'll see if, you know, if it's a challenge that he feels up for, because at the end of the day, you know, if he fights me, it's going to be a fight. You know what I'm saying? All respect to the great Mayweather, but Mayweather was just playing, you know what I'm saying? He was playing around with him. You know, you know, he allowed Jake to look good, you know, he allowed Jake to feel comfortable, but But if Jake comes against me, you know, Jake gonna have to do some work. And I'm not sure if I'm not sure if he's for that. But we'll see. You know, we'll see if he accepts this fight, then he's down and he's a lot tougher than I thought. But if he don't, then the party goes on. I find somebody else to dance with.
I was gonna say, when you look at these guys, Logan Paul, Jake Paul, you're a UFC Hall of Famer. When you look at these guys, are you thinking easy paycheck, let's go cash it in? Or do you look at them and say, I'm actually kind of impressed with what they've done, because it does seem like they're taking the boxing seriously, even if the rest of it is kind of some shenanigans and such.
I feel like, you know, I'm very surprised and I'm very impressed with what they've been able to do. You know, with the numbers alone, being able to get that many people to actually tune into a fight like this, you know, of this capacity, and really just carving out their own, you know, demographic and their own, you know, fighting organization, pretty much, and the own fighting organization is for me, it's very impressive. But at the same time, you know, I don't think they are at the highest caliber, but they are tough. They are tough. I think Jake may be tougher than Logan, but at the same time, you know, I still think that Logan has some intangibles that Jake doesn't have. You know, I think that Logan's a bit stronger. I think Logan's a bit stronger.
Yeah, I've been you know, thinking about a couple of names. A couple of names came to mind. You know, we were in talks with Roy Jones. We were talking with Logan Paul as well too. You know, I don't know what's going to happen with the Roy Jones situation, but the Logan Paul is one that, you know, we're trying to get for September 9th. September 18th, you know, we're trying to get a fight with Logan around that time. You know, it all depends, though. You know, it all depends on, you know, if this is something that, you know, he's really wanting to do, or something that he feels confident about doing. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, he's not a real fighter. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't have the mentality of a fighter. So for him, it's more like a, you know, like, you know, he's fighting for popularity, you know what I'm saying? It's not the same mindset, you know. So, but I would love to fight though. I would love to fight with Logan Paul, because I feel like, you know, with a fight with Logan, Logan is you know, he's young, he's tough, he's got some size. I feel like it would be competitive, you know what I'm saying? You know, I haven't fought in a long time, and you know, he's been training, he's been looking pretty good. So, I think it'd be a pretty good fight, and I think it'd be something good for the fans to see too, you know.
I think it would be great. How soon do you need to know? I mean, do you have a deadline of when you have to be committed to this date, or is this just kind of open-ended?
It's open-ended right now. You know, it's not anything that's set in stone. You know, those are a few dates that were thrown around. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be other times that we can make the matchup happen if it does end up happening. But, you know, those were the dates that I've heard originally. But, I'm down to fight any of these guys. You know, there's a lot of guys on the market on the horizon, you know, even outside of the whole Logan Paul situation. You know, this whole celebrity boxing thing is kind of grew some legs now. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity in this arena. You know, you have Vitor Belfort fighting Oscar De La Hoya. So there's a lot of this going on. There's a lot of potential. So whether it's with Logan Paul, it's going to be with somebody, you know what I'm saying? I would just rather it be with Logan Paul, because that would be a fun fight to start off with.
I like it. So how long do you think this run lasts? I mean, you said one or two, but if you're boxing celebrities, maybe you could get out there a little longer, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I was thinking one or two, but, you know, it's taking a fight-by-fight basis. You know, at this point in my life, you know, I feel like, you know, John, everything changed, like, ever since I stopped fighting in the UFC, I went through so much transformation, you know. I changed my diet, you know, my mind has changed, you know, just with a lot of different things I experienced, you know, as you mentioned before, you know, the psychedelic path that I was on, you know what I'm saying? It's all these different things that just kind of give life a different perspective. And for me, I've never been more confident, never been more secure, and just wanting to compete and enjoy competing as such, you know what I'm saying? Without all of the strings that comes along with competing sometimes, you know? When I first started competing, it was something that I loved to do. I would fantasize about it all the time, but towards the end, I just couldn't get away from it fast enough. You know, I just could not. It just was something I wanted nothing to do with anymore. But, you know, since I've been on my journey and since I've been, you know, figuring myself out, figuring out what in life that I really want, I started to have a different outlook and started to have a different relationship with just the mindset of being wanting to compete in the first place.
Do you think, and I often wondered about this, do you think it was the rivalries with Rampage and the rivalry with John Jones that made it, like, so unenjoyable for you? Do you think it was the rivalry with Rampage and the rivalry with John Jones that made it so tough for you? I mean, those were intense, like, emotional rivalries. I mean, did that take a lot out of you?
Yeah, those fights did take a lot out of me, man. You know, it was those fights, man. Those fights took a lot out of me, and you know, it was the rebuilding myself afterwards. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm totally honest with myself, it was a mental defeat, and I just really had a hard time of just bouncing back on so many different aspects, because you can lose physically speaking, and then get your mind right, and then turn that around to be able to compete again, but. You know, after I lost to John Jones, it really just took a long time for me just to find that will to want to compete again, you know, and find that stride that I once had. And then once the knee injury happened, it was another thing in a way, too, that kind of just took my confidence away, because being the smaller fighter, I had those big legs. Everything was my legs, you know, and it helped me move in and out of danger, help me take people down, and it was just my basis of Sugar Rashad Evans. And once I lost my leg, I lost my ability to bring the sweetness. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't out there being the better mover, being the most athletic fighter in the octagon. I wasn't being that fighter anymore. And once I stopped being a fighter anymore, I just became an average fighter.
I appreciate your honesty there, man. Well, I got one question that I have to ask. What did your mom say? What did your mom say when you told her you were going to fight again? Surely she had something to say.
Wait, Rashad, listen. Rashad, I know you're thinking that you want to get out there and box again, but Rashad, sit your ass down somewhere, Rashad. My mama told me to sit down somewhere, man. She never shot. Sit your ass down somewhere. But you know what? The last time my mama told me to sit my ass down somewhere, I became UFC world champion. So.
Sometimes you can't listen. That's awesome, man.
Sometimes you can't listen, man.
Well, Rashad, man, it's exciting to hear you're back. Obviously, man, we miss seeing you compete, and I look forward to seeing it again. Any last messages, thoughts you want out there for people that may think you're crazy or they wondering what the hell you're doing?
Yeah, people going to think I'm crazy, but that's all right. Once I get into the ring, they're going to see, okay, he's got a little method behind his madness, you know. He's kind of crazy, but in a good way. I want to get this opportunity, man. And, you know, Logan Paul, hey. Sign online, man. Let's make this happen. Let's see the fans that they want to see.
Perfect. Can't say any better than that. Thank you, Rashad. It's good catching up with you, and I look forward to seeing the fight, man.
Thank you, John. Take care, man. I appreciate you.
All right, there it was, Rashad Evans, man. Hadn't talked to him in a while. It was good to catch up with him. Listen, I'm a little surprised he's chasing after this celebrity boxing match, if you will, or influencer boxing. But, dude, you can't fault these guys for trying to go and get a paycheck late in their career. And it's good to hear Rashad happy again, man. You know, he touched on it, but, dude, you could just feel it at the end of his career, man. I don't say he didn't want to be there, man, but it seemed like he was – burned out, like you said, burned out, man. Frustrated, the weight of the world on his shoulders, man. And it was sad because he was such a fun guy early in his career. And at the end, it just felt like, I'm here because I have to be, you know what I mean? So to hear that enthusiasm in his voice again and to feel that passion, that love back into it, man, it's awesome. So good to hear from Rashad Evans. All right, Cole Coffey, I guess we got to get going, man. Both of us got stuff to do. I know I still got some packing to do. I know you plan ahead, so you might be all ready to go, but I still have some work to do. I will say Cage Fury Fighting Championships this weekend. Like I said, Fury Professional Grappling on Friday night. It's our first one on Friday night. It's going to be me and CM Punk on the call, but we got a little bit different. It's not going to look exactly the same. It's going to feel a little bit different. We've talked about it on the phone. I have yet to see it in person yet, so I'm flying out tonight, but I'm excited about that. So tune in Friday for some professional grappling if you want, and then CFSC 98. Dude, we got a great card on CFSC 98. Evan Cutts versus Johan Lioness. Johan Lioness is the guy that had the 14-second flying knee KO. He's challenging for the title against Evan Cutts, who just had an absolutely grueling win over Basil Chavez last time out to get the welterweight title. So that's that. Santo Curatolo, who I think will still be in the UFC at some point, former flyweight champ, lost his belt. He's got his first fight back. Solomon Renfro, this dude is amazing, and he says, you know, I want to be the greatest of all time. He wants to box at some point in his career as well. So I'm telling you, some great fights on Saturday as well. But that's what I got going. Are you all packed up and good? Am I just slowing you down? Are you just hanging out and having more JMO for the rest of the afternoon?
I am. I haven't packed yet, but I'm going to actually try to do the John Morgan trip this time, and I don't think I'm going to check a bag. I think I'm just going to bring my carry-on that's going to have my laptop, and I think I'll bring a small like duffel bag just with stuff, just because I'm only there for a matter of days. So I think I'm going to try to make it a little bit shorter and quick. But you forgot to mention your favorite part about the Fury grappling production is that you.
What is that?
You're going to get to wear shorts.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It is the best part, man. It's so great. Rob Hadak, the president, you know, he's kind of rolling this out to us. He's like, hey, I got this idea. What do you guys think about it? And he's like, I'm thinking, like, for the grappling, we have, like, a different vibe. Like, we're not going to sit you at a desk and make it all formal. We're going to do it a little more casual. Make just kind of a, you know, seated area, but you guys can kind of hang out a little bit. He was like, and I don't want you guys wearing suits. He's like, grappling just doesn't feel like a thing where you wear suits. He's like, are you, you know, just guys come and wear whatever you want. And I was like, whoa, I can wear, like, T-shirt and shorts? Is that cool? He's like, yeah, man. Just put, I'm like.
You're like, sign me up. I'm there.
You're gonna pay me to talk about combat sports, and I don't even have to put this stupid suit on that I hate putting on. I'm like, yes. He even said, I don't even care if you have like a little rocks glass there beside you. He's like,
oh,
if you want
shit.
That, I'm like, nah. I said, no. I still gotta keep this some level of professionalism, man.
You're gonna be like the Oscar De La Hoya, just drunk and rambling on the thing. You're just like, well, fellas, I don't know what he's doing right there, but it looks stupid.
We're going to be like Triller, but also totally not like Triller, basically. We're going to be a little more casual. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But good on you, man. I have not checked a bag in, like, I don't know, man, 12 years, 13 years, except when I had to go to Fight Island.
And why was that?
For like 5 weeks
at
a time.
Why was that? You wanted more clothes. Oh, you just wanted to bring more clothes because it's so long. Yeah.
No, that was part of it, was the idea of having more clothes, but we also had access to washing machines, so really you could just keep washing your clothes over and over. But see, the problem is the 1.75 liter bottles of vodka that I was packing in my bags, you can't carry those on. Even when it's a chartered shuttle, they make you pack those underneath. So
that's funny. Yeah, no, I'm stoked.
It keeps it real.
Yeah, I'm stoked to be pack light and quick, man. So I'm looking forward to, and partially too because of when I get back on Tuesday, that window to make it over to the rapid testing is going to be very, very short. So I think my flight lands around 5 o'clock. The window shuts around 6 or 7, I think. So that was another reason why I was like, okay, don't pack any, don't check fingers, a bag. So fingers crossed. So
fingers crossed, no delays. Like you said, it's a busy one next week. UFC 264. Look, man, it's a big fight for Conor. I mean, anytime Conor fights, it's a big fight, but it's a big fight. The trilogy, there's so much built up in that. It's a big one for Conor McGregor. We'll talk about all that next week. Look, the Nate Diaz fight is always going to be there, so I'm not saying, like, if he loses here, he doesn't fight again. He definitely cashes in one more time with that Nate Diaz fight. But in terms of, you know, what's available in the future and championships and big fights, man, this is a big one for Conor McGregor. So looking forward to that. But, yeah. We'll cover all that next week. In the meantime, everybody enjoy the weekend. Be safe, obviously. Independence Day weekend, yes. Alcohol and fireworks. Enjoy
are great.
Them, but enjoy
they go
them
great
all
together.
Responsibly because this they go great together, but this seems to be a week when dumb stuff happens. So be very, very careful out there. Be safe, everybody. Enjoy it. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.